I know I'm preaching to the choir this morning, and it's nice to preach to the choir. I think that I'm in a position to give us a little bit of time because our program is pressed with the way the morning has gone. What's happened is that I've seen in a number of other presentations some of my ideas being stolen from me before I can present them, which is okay. Maybe you'll hear it from a different angle, through a different discipline of study from a different individual. Maybe that'll be helpful. And Cheryl and Oscar have definitely done a little bit of stealing from me. But let's go through. You know, David Trim talked about the grief, and it was so powerful this morning. As he was grieving for his daughter's illness, he's also grieving for the lost from the church.
Yes.
That was hugely powerful. There's just nothing that we would disagree with here. We want to make Adventist better. And so I'm offering you a few bricks today. Unlike Glenn and Lee, who brought a fairly nice, complete design and a package, I'm bringing a few bricks. And I pray that with God's help, you'll take a few of those bricks and you'll put them in the building that we all are constructing in our own individual work, in our church understanding about discipleship. There's a chapter in the book that you were given that develops my presentation a little better. You know, so it's just intolerable. The dropout rate is, it can cause alienation and vaccination against the gospel. Mm-hmm. What David gave me hope is that his data show not everybody apparently is vaccinated. Apparently, a number of them are willing to come back, and that's wonderful. But others may have been better off if they hadn't come in. They're alienated, they're fed up, they don't like it, and this is a real danger that we have to consider. And so I think it's better to do mission the right way first, instead of spending a lot of time talking about retention and reclamation. Yeah. Let's do it right first, and maybe as we think and pray about it, we can do it. There's some intolerable philosophies of mission. One is take it or leave it. One is win some, lose some. One is increasing our market share. And this, Cheryl reported having heard this somewhere. Look on the bright side. We lost 40, but at least we kept 60%. She's denying it.
Anyway. No, I have heard it.
She has heard it.
I accept it.
So in my observation, we place too heavy an emphasis on pre-baptismal preparation. We use baptism as a single marker of mission success. And we often speak of the need, but we know there's more that's needed for post-baptismal follow-up. So should we change the measure of mission success? And so Anthony gave us some good ideas in this morning's presentation. Should pre-baptism, baptism, and post-baptism be wrapped into a package called discipleship? And I'm convinced of that. I believe so. The passage from Ministry of Healing is very, very familiar. What was Jesus actually doing? Follow me and become my disciples. And how did he teach? Well, first of all, he used culturally familiar and available methods and modes. iPhones weren't around in that era. Now, he could have created an iPhone, but they wouldn't have known how to relate to it. He could have actually created a modern book, an old-fashioned Bible, but all they had were rolled-up scrolls. But he was incarnated into the culture of his time. He did mission in their cultural style, and so he uses the modes that were available. He read standing up. He taught sitting down. And whatever was appropriate in that culture, he did. He used parables, private teaching, mentoring, deeds of love, confronting evil powers, praying, suffering. What did he teach them? Well, look here. Just look in Matthew and just remind yourself of the things that Jesus taught them, the content of his teaching. See, I'm convinced that Adventist evangelism should never be less than full doctrinal instruction, but it should always be more than full doctrinal instruction. Much more. And the more is that which goes beyond being able to agree that, yes, I believe in this belief and this belief and this belief. It actually goes to the place of leading them as Christ did in his method of being Christ-like. That's the goal. I have grown up in this church. I am the grandson of an ordained Adventist minister and missionary, and the son and the father and of an ordained Adventist minister. And I have seen too many of us, I say us, who are really good with those beliefs. And we have a long ways to go, and we're still walking the journey of being Christ-like and becoming his disciples. We're all on that journey. But that's where the focus really, really needs to be. Once we know the basic beliefs. And so the Great Commission is to make disciples. Notice it didn't say go and baptize. Baptism is one of the mark, one of the processes. And here are the elements of disciple making: intentionality, comprehensive teaching, and baptizing. A disciple is one. Now this is my definition that comes from the chapter and another book that I wrote. A disciple is one who experiences continual transformation toward the fullness in Christ in a biblically faithful way. Number one, that's it. That's the starting point. The foundation of being a disciple is to be faithful to the Bible. Number two, in a culturally appropriate way. Number three, at a worldview level, not just behavior, not just stopping the bad behaviors and going to church on the right day, but at the deep level, in personal spirituality, emotional wholeness, in personal lifestyle, in family relationships, marriage, family, as a member of the body of Christ, as a witness to others. It's a long, lifelong process, and it starts either at birth for an Adventist like myself. Actually, mine began before I was born. When my mother knew she was pregnant, she began singing songs in all of her working. She said, the prenatal influence will be there. And she sang the sweetest children's songs that she could imagine. And she was still discipling me when she went to her rest at age 89. And so, or when people make the first contact, when we make a first contact with somebody who's interested, that's when discipleship begins. And that continues until the bookend of our life, the end of our life, or until Jesus comes. And so this stuff that's been said. Now, I want to offer an opinion or a remark on the word harvesting and reaping. Paul uses those words for an immediate local harvest. It's biblical. But the main biblical usage refers to the parousia, the end time, when the angels are going to come down. That's the biblical harvest. And I am fearful of using the words harvest and reaping for baptism because it implies that too much of a completed task. Too much of a completed task. So another remark I have on some of the perceptions I have from my Adventist world, that the involvement in witnessing is something like a magic bullet of discipleship. Just do that, get people involved in witnessing, and that'll take care of it all. And there is no question, it's biblical, as soon as people follow Christ, they should be led to witness for Christ. But I can think of too many people who are very aggressive in soul winning as lay people, pastors and evangelists who are far from the full discipleship to which God intends. I'm thinking of a member of my extended family who came to Christ in his 30s, and he became very active in the church, became a church elder. He was constantly giving Bible studies. He never stopped smoking until he died in his 70s. And the failure to address that issue in his life and that part of his discipleship made him a bitter, angry man who was far from the disciple that God would like him to be. Yet he was an aggressive witnessing person, a Bible study person in the church. People come to the church from many places. Most Adventists have come from a place like this. Most Adventists have and continue to come from other Christian groups into the Adventist church. But we are called upon increasingly to bring them from these other places. But unfortunately, some of us are still trying to use the same journey and the same route to get them from here to here as from here to here. Coming from being a Methodist to being an Adventist Christian, or a Muslim being an Adventist Christian, is a vastly different journey. Vastly different. The destination is the same, the journey is different. Let's think about that for a moment. Mature Christians have so much going for them already. Man, they've got it all. But they've got it there. And their discipleship journey is relatively short. That is the part coming into our faith. They need to learn the unique value added or finishing truths of the Adventist message. That's what they need. Or put that person up to a nominal or a peripheral Christian who has some kind of vague beliefs, but not well developed. Almost no knowledge of the Bible. The America and Europe and perhaps Australia, we're full of these sorts of people here. And the Western world, where the traditionally Christian Western world, is full of people like this. And their journey is variable, but it's tends to be longer. They need to learn the starting level Christian beliefs, because they don't really know them. And we cannot assume very much. It's nice that they self-identify as Christians, but that doesn't take them too far along the journey. But now let's compare these to Muslim, Hindus, and Buddhists. They have other scriptures, clergy, well-developed belief systems, and they hold worldview assumptions that are 180 degrees upside down different from Christian worldview assumptions. And, you know, they have to learn everything. They're beginning from step one about who God is and who Christ is, what the Bible is. The journeys are so different. And so Cheryl and Oscar use this term, receptor-oriented communication. How do the receivers need to receive the message to understand it best? How do they not? How do I like to give it best? We have our favorite methods, our habituated methods. Sometimes we identify methods with message. And I'd like to say that the methods need to be different for the very same Adventist message. The materials need to be specific. The teaching sequence needs to be different. And the teaching emphasis. With Methodists and Baptists, we spend a long time proving that that Sunday isn't the Sabbath. And but with some of the non-Christian groups, the challenge is elsewhere. They're not convicted on Sunday. We only have to show them the Sabbath, and it comes like a gift from heaven to them. They understand it easily. So we dare not simply take the same series of evangelistic meetings with the same order of topics and the same content. Sometimes we do that and we just put on different kind of pictures, ethnic pictures. But that's not enough. It needs to be more than pictures. A small distinction between cross-cultural and multicultural. Cross-cultural is the person who is witnessing in another culture to another religion. For instance, the Zimbabwean teacher who worked with my son in Egypt, and he needs to use receptor-oriented approach to his one culture there in Egypt. The multicultural approach is the person who is serving multiple cultures, and this is the pastor in many congregations in North America and in Europe. They have strong cohorts of major cultures in their congregation and in their communities. So they have to use receptor-oriented approaches that are valid for people of different cultures. Cheryl and Oscar mentioned something on orality and literacy. You know that it's not evenly spread around the world, but I've got some punchlines here from a little research that is helpful. Oral learners are those who learn best and whose lives are most likely to be transformed when instruction comes in oral forms. I taught a ministerial school for 14 years in Malawi, and this is an oral culture. However literate they may be and highly educated they are, they like it being heard, to be spoken. I learned that I could not put out an assignment on a piece of paper and say, here it is, here's your assignment, do it. I had to speak the assignment. These are intelligent people. In my literate writing culture, I haven't understood it until I read it. They haven't heard it, understood it until they hear it. Dramatic difference. Print learners learn best and experience life transition best through reading. And so we need to learn culturally familiar modes, and these days we have new ways of bringing audio learning to people. Things like mnemonics, memorization, repetition, and recitation are important in oral cultures, and contextualized materials for the print learners. Now, stories, proverbs, and parables. I don't know about you, I got my worldviews from this set of books. Sitting on my mother's knee, looking at the pictures as she read me the stories over and over and over. I learned about the Sabbath, learning about the manna in the wilderness, not by getting a scholarly discussion on what the Sabbath was. And in that era, we had the Sabbath school picture rolls. Anybody remember those? There was the text, there was the picture. Those came every quarter. And all over Malawi, as I was a child growing up, a person would take that picture roll, hang it around their neck, here it was right here, and they walked in front of the group, adult or children, there was the picture, and the people looked at the picture while they heard the story. It was a phenomenally successful way. Story is the language of the heart. Life is not a list of propositions, it is a series of dramatic scenes. Certainly that's what my life is like. Say the sacred stories of the Bible are its main vehicles of worldview assumption, not the propositional statements. Stories, proverbs, and parables, and the stories that every culture has answer the basic questions that people have. So worldview transformation requires internalizing and adopting the stories of the Bible because they are particularly good at modifying or subverting other stories of their worldviews and other worldviews. See, other groups of people have their story of why we're in trouble, why humanity is in trouble. The story of the fall is what needs to go in there to replace that, because you can't understand salvation without understanding the fall in the biblical way. Proverbs. Now this is a power line here. Proverbs, parables, and sayings are not supplementary to logical arguments. They are the substance of thought itself, the storehouse of wisdom. A story is not something you give to keep the kiddies entertained. Not just something light, it is something major. And I offer you this proverb. A proverb is worth a thousand words. I offer you this American proverb, and I won't take time to develop it. You made your bed, now sleep in it. That's what we say to the young couple who insists on getting married too soon, and we say, no, you got married, made your bed, now sleep in it. Now, this is a primary vehicle of truth, not a secondary one. There are deep lessons in Proverbs that need to be part of discipling. Jesus used parables. Yeah, I'm coming to the end. And rituals. Rituals drive meaning deep to the bone. Rituals like life stage rituals, rituals of prayer and community for unexpected events, and drama. Drama is important. When I was a child, my dad reenacted Elijah on Mount Carmel in a youth camp. He actually had the fire fall from a big tree onto the altar, and that picture lives in my mind. These are important elements of disciple making. Thank you for your time.